Hello, and welcome to this latest podisode of Tapped. I'm one of your hosts, Joseph Fusco, and I have with me...
Julie.
And...
Gretel.
And today we're going to be talking about a whole host of stuff, including the recent broadcast of Jesus Christ Superstar. But first, we'll talk about a couple of things in the news. Number one... One of my favorite filmmakers passed away this morning, Milos Forman, the director of Amadeus and Hair and Ragtime and The People vs. Larry Flint and the very underrated Goya's Ghosts. And he was about 86 years old and was in ill health recently, and it's very sad. The film is the worse off for not having him make movies anymore. So thank you, Milos Forman, for all that you brought to film. So that happened, and other things happened this morning involving a little place called Tarjay.
On a completely different note.
Tarjay in Harlem, in East Harlem.
Was one of the few stores to have the new limited edition Hunter collection.
By Target, and as many people know, which I think by many I mean everybody, Target will run specials, limited collections with different brands, different people, different designers, and their most recent collaboration was Hunter, and if you don't know Hunter, it's a British brand that's most famous for its rain boots.
Yes, you see them on Princess Kate Middleton and others. When they muck about.
Or any college student who figures out that when you're walking around between classes, you need boots that will stay keep your feet dry.
And, as opposed to ones that just look cute.
I learned my hard way. And then obviously a collection of bags and raincoats and children's and menswear.
They had hammocks.
Blankets, all with the theme of, though, of being rainproof.
Now, as somebody who is neither a college student nor a princess, can you...
Sometimes.
At the risk of sounding like Senator Chuck Grassley interviewing or interrogating Mark Zuckerberg about Facebook, and how does it make money... asking really painfully obvious
questions. Sir, we run ads.
Right, but how does it make money? Is Hunter brand products, are they affordable? Are they luxury?
At Tarjay, they're affordable, which is why we got up at the crack of dawn.
So at 8 a.m. when Target opened, we were there by 7:30. There was probably a line of like a couple people already there, and by the time 8 o'clock rang around when the red doors opened, there was probably like 50 to
at least
100 people ready to tackle the section. And this happened to be the second time Julie and I have woken up at the crack of dawn to go to a collection opening. The other one was Jason Wu, which is also a very unaffordable brand to normal people like us.
Yeah, Jason Wu was a designer. Michelle Obama had worn several of his styles. And so we were excited. We're like, ooh, affordable at Tarjay. And by the time we got there...
We're talking like minutes after the doors opened.
Minutes. It was picked clean.
Yeah, people... And Vultures. So we knew better. Like, we... We're ready to go. You grab and you go. And you grab and you take your items and then you try them on later. Don't look for a size. Just take what you can.
And leave the baskets to the side. People were like pushing their shopping carts and like, you can't get through the aisles with the shopping cart.
Yeah, imagine 20 people with shopping carts in one section of Target at the same time. It was all going the same direction.
It was crazy. I mean...
So paint this picture for me. How big a section was the Hunter section?
I mean, it was probably no bigger than, like, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet in total.
And it was so crazy that people knocked over a display.
Jesus.
Like, thankfully no one was hurt.
Nobody was hurt in the Hunter Target release.
But
they could have been.
They
hurt.
Could have easily been.
Were any hunter products hurt during this siege?
No, but people did grab before things were on the floor, which was crazy. They grabbed it right off a cart and got yelled at by the Target employees. Gretel, the good friend that she is, grabbed a pair of boots for me.
Because they were gone within minutes. And then I spotted one in between another part of the store on the floor section. And I saw them and I looked, they looked like Julie's size. And it was so crazy that as I was picking them up, another woman from across the aisle looked at me and goes like, if you don't want them, I'll take them. And so I took them and ran away and found Julie. Oh, I was like, God. Are these your size?
And they were. And that's why she's a good friend. she has my back.
And apparently your feet, too.
For and that. My feet.
Your feet will be now dry.
That's right. She takes very good care of me.
I never had rain boots. I was always that dumb kid with, like, sneakers that had holes in it that, like, my feet were always wet, you know, walking through the snow in, like, high tops. That was my snow gear. I don't know what was going on with me, so...
Well, I mean, it was a lot of fun. It's definitely one of those cultural experiences. It's sort of like Black Friday, but thank God not as bad as Black Friday. But it was interesting. I'm glad we were more successful this time than our Jason Wu experience. But yeah, people need to calm down a little bit too.
I mean, people were actually, I mean, overall respectful.
Yes.
Like nobody got hurt. There were no screaming matches. As far as we saw, and we were also in and out of the store within 30 minutes.
Which is crazy. I don't think on a normal visit am I out of Target that fast.
Because the rest of the sections, which, you know, I grabbed some groceries and some cleaning supplies, nobody was there in the rest of the store. So I was just like, blah, 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 just grabbing what I want and then checking out.
Yeah.
So it was a successful haul.
It was a successful
totally
trip.
Successful.
If anyone is interested, you can check online. They do sell some of this collection online, but I'm guessing it's selling out pretty fast. So it was a fun experience. And
did you walk away with any lessons or impressions of humanity?
I would say it's got to be really worth it. Because what I saw, I don't know if people were buying just to buy and resell, but, you know, we made calculated choices. Like,
I mean, I did have a hammock in my hand at one point.
A hammock in New York.
And I was like, no, I don't need that. It was in my hand. Because
it looked
some
cute.
Of the things were packaged and they were really cute. And then I was like, no, I put it back.
Gotcha. And then once you put it back,
I mean, somebody also
like...
put back a fanny pack.
Yes. A bright yellow fanny pack. Which
Why did they pick it up to begin with?
Because I wanted a fanny pack.
And not just, it's like, I am wearing a fanny pack or yellow.
But then I realized, no.
Oh, okay. My question was rhetorical. I didn't realize there actually was... an answer to that question that could be readily accessed at a given moment.
To hold my knickknacks.
See.
Anyways, it was put back, and perhaps it found a much nicer home.
Amongst all the other lovely Target stuff. Although, looking at the other clothes, I was like, I owned all of these styles at one point, and I've since given them away. It's amazing how much, you know, like the fanny pack. 90s is fully back in fashion.
Fully back. And what was also interesting, and we could spend the whole other episode on Fixer Upper and Magnolia Homes, because they now have a collection. Chip and Joanna Gaines have a collection at Target. And it was some gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, if you can't make it out to Waco, Texas, you can now make it out to your local Target and still get some really... high quality, good looking stuff by the Fixer Upper couple, whose last episode aired, I think, 2 weeks ago on HGTV. But they will continue their Target line, which looks really great.
Oh. Yeah. So this is not a paid advertisement. It just is our experience at Target, a beloved store. But it was really interesting. It was a really interesting morning.
Well, good. I'm glad it was a good haul.
Yeah.
And I hope that, in fact, I know that fanny pack got a good haul.
Just not here.
Just not here. Okay, so moving along, let's get to the topic of the main event, which is Jesus Christ Superstar, starring John Legend and Sarah Bareilles and Alice Cooper and Brandon Victor Dixon and Norm Lewis.
Yay.
And
Jen Ha.
Jen Ha, that's right. And somebody else's wonderful cast and crew bringing this show together. Andrew Lloyd Webber's classic from 1971 was broadcast live on television in like a staged concert-y kind of event.
They said staged concert-y event, but that was a production.
Full production. Now, we have somebody in studio who had a front row seat to the dress.
Technically second row.
Oh.
Well then,
we're canceling this. Yeah. I would actually like to introduce my friend Robert. Robert, come on out here.
Robert did have a front
Robert,
row.
I do have a friend who had a front row seat who was on camera during Alice Cooper's song, and he was there beaming, grinning from ear to ear, and at that moment he received like hundreds of texts and Facebook posts of him, people taking pictures. So shout out to Robert Ackerman. Anyway, so
what was it like?
What was it like at the dress rehearsal?
So yeah, let's back up. So Jesus Christ Superstar was live broadcast on air
Easter Sunday,
8 p.m. on NBC. And I had the pleasure of going to the dress rehearsal the day before on Saturday. And knew that it was going to be a long commitment, which was a 7-hour commitment, which I had to show up at 2 p.m. To check in, and then they bust us to the Armory because there's really no place to gather at the Armory.
This was in Brooklyn, New York?
In Brooklyn, let alone any bathrooms at the Armory. So we did all of that, organized, got our tickets in order at 2 p.m. And let's just say that the show didn't start till like 5 p.m. So we were organized, and showed up, and I ended up getting second row seats, which was amazing. And the Armory was really transformed. It's really just an old brick building. There are literally piles of brick outside of it, as they were still under construction, and they were able to build this entire set. All of the seating was brought in, all the lighting brought in, so there's like tons of generators outside. All the trailers were outside. But you could, and they locked up our phones, but the hype was really real. Like, you could tell people were really excited to be there. And as soon as those first notes hit, which was on a young teenage boy playing the guitar, if you saw the show, things really got rolling. And another piece of advice people have seen, as there have been many live musicals, it was also less than 3 hours, which is rare. And they really used their time well to tell this story and showcase each of the actors. This is also the first time it's been a completely sung through show. Obviously, an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical that's a classic, which was also written by him and Tim Rice when they were like in their early 20s.
And I think it started as a concept album.
It was a concept album.
Yeah, and then that transferred into a stage show and then a movie. Mm-hmm. All in the 70s. Yeah. And so obviously taking those 70s rock vibes. And obviously we saw a lot of musicals come after that, like Godspell and stuff like that. And then obviously transformed into this live broadcast, which was modernized and the costumes and the set. Which I thought the costumes were amazing in person, especially those coats that like Norm Lewis and Jen Ha were wearing just glistened. There was a lot of glitter. At one point they throw buckets of glitter on the stage and you could hear this like audible gasp of people being like, oh, I'm going to clean that up. And so commercial break hit, cause they practiced all the commercial breaks and you had like people all rush to the stage and you could hear people who were all laughing and, clapping and congratulating them on cleaning up all the glitter in a commercial break. And you could see some places where they had like left some glitter, and so then they would come back in the next commercial break and clean it all up. And so the crew was amazing throughout that process and building new pieces of the set as things were to merge. And then of course John Legend and Sarah Bareilles Alice Cooper and Brandon Victor Dixon, who I was familiar with due to his work in Hamilton, but I knew that he would become a star based on watching that closing number, and obviously throughout the show, but that closing number was just so fantastic. And you guys watched it,
yes.
Right?
So, I have questions. So all right, so they bus you out there.
Yeah.
Do they feed you?
We knew it was going to be a long day. They knew it was going to be a long day, and nothing, you don't want to... hangry audience, and these were clearly people who were, this was their job, is to work with audiences, and so they gave us the option of a fruit, which was either a banana or an apple, and a granola bar and a bottle of water, which we were allowed to take with us on the bus. It felt like a freaking field trip, because A, we were lined up in like a single file line, B, given a fruit, a snack, and a water bottle, getting on a bus, and then like all getting out of the bus, and then also getting back into said line when we're outside of the bus with like instructions to where the bathroom is and like go here and yada yada yada. So,
and how many buses were there?
I was probably on like the second or third bus, and there were several buses. I think it sat 1,500 people.
Okay.
And they took your phones away.
They put them in a little pack. I mean, so they were, it was with me, but it was in a, like, locked packet that's once we got to the
venue.
That's
a new thing where they have these Ziploc bags that only the venue has the key to it. You hold on to the phone.
Yeah, it's like a magnetic
But they thing. They... You can't access it, but you're not leaving it with somebody, so there's that sort of...
I just think that's such an interesting social experiment, to take all these people and put them together, but take their phones away.
It's the third time I've been to an event where my phone has had to been locked up. And it is, and there's a couple definitely people, like VIP people who got their phones, and it was like, you could see the eyes on people being like,
Chrissy Teigen gets her phone.
Who she was not there, and I was highly disappointed not to see Chrissy, who did tweet, and if you do want a hilarious example of what was going on, please look at her tweets from during the live broadcast.
Yes, if you don't know, John Legend is married to the wonderful Chrissy Teigen, who is a model and entrepreneur and cookbook author, very pregnant at this point in time. I was convinced she was going to give birth, you know, to the child of Jesus during the show, but she hasn't as of this taping. But yeah, she tweets prolifically and is very funny at times, and she did tweet during the broadcast.
Yeah, and even while he was in rehearsals, she would tweet pictures of her cooking for John, but she would hashtag it cooking for Jesus.
So they put you on a bus, they give you an apple, a granola bar, and a bottle of water, and that's all you are able to have for 7 hours.
I mean, by the time I got on the bus, it was like probably 2 hours down. Like 1 or 2 hours down.
Oh my gosh. So you're standing there for 2 hours.
Yeah, and then by the time we got there, it was probably like 3:34, probably 4-ish. Mm-hmm. And then we are sat into seats, and you're just looking at the stage and the set and everything. And all you want to do is take a picture with your cell phone.
But you can't.
So then you have to wait another, like, hour and a half as they're setting stuff up. So by buses, so everybody would come in by bus. It's probably, right. I don't know how many buses that they rented, but, like, only people could come in. Like, there's a small, very small street where buses had to come in and out, and so they would only bus people in, like, a couple buses at a time. So until 1,500 people were transferred from one part of Brooklyn to the Armory.
Gotcha.
And I was probably in one of the first buses in. Right. So I had to wait for everybody to. And there was floor seats. Mm-hmm. And we felt, there were floor standing area, which we felt really. So I was in the second row of the seated area,
yeah.
Which was a perfect view. But then there were all these floor seats, and we felt so bad because they literally had to stand for all that time.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, that's what we said for those people in the seats.
So that means your friends stood. But for
they
a
very were
very, time.
But they were very close. And if you watch the broadcast, they were in, you know, part of the action in terms of like being part of the crowd, because much of the show is about the hype and the experience of the people, you know, during the story.
Yeah. So was there like a warm up act? Did they do anything to get you guys?
The director came out and was like, thanks for coming. Like, feel free to cheer. Feel free to do stuff. We were mic'd the entire time. Like, no, there were audience mics clearly. So they were picking up our sound. There was no audio mixing, so everything was the same level. So the instruments, the voices, and everything. So it was a little bit hard to hear. And I know people were complaining about that even on the broadcast about it being not properly mixed, but it was still better than what I heard in person.
Gotcha.
But I could tell that they were mixing for output.
Interesting. Huh. Interesting. Was it loud?
It was loud, but like, I mean, because I was probably only a couple hundred feet from the orchestra, which was amazing. Yeah. And what there are like other parts of the set that you probably didn't see, which was like there's a huge rock to one part. Like everything was raised up above the actual floor. So they're never on the floor. We were always raised above the floor of the armory. The emotion of it. And when at the end, when the second piece of the stage split open to form a cross, which was the last shot of the last song, like I just burst into tears. It was so beautiful to see that. And I couldn't even see, because I was to the side of that, I couldn't even see then John being like dragged into the light. Like I didn't see any of that. But it was still like so breathtaking. Like it literally took my breath away. The staging of it and the choreography I thought was really awesome, because obviously too, one thing you couldn't see, there were so many close-ups on camera, was like every person had something to do all the time, and so to see the ensemble, who was amazing, which was great. And I think one of my favorite parts of the dress rehearsal was one of the ensemble members spotted a friend in the audience and they go, "We love you, this is so great," and then she started crying and then I started crying and like they started crying, and like because you could tell like they were gonna, you know, these were moments for them.
And I think that was my biggest critique, was that there were so many close-ups and there was so much going on. I wanted to see it. I didn't want just to be cut off from it, and there were a lot of quick cuts. And I said, no, hang on this moment. You know, this is such a dramatic, beautiful moment. And I thought John Legend actually did a wonderful job. And I wanted to see a little more of that, but they kept cutting away. And so that was my only really critique. I thought it was wonderful, especially considering a lot of the latest live musicals on television haven't been so necessarily engaging. And I just thought, wow, this was really bold and out there, and they brought it to a whole new audience, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're taking a piece of material that's 45, 46 years old, that if you listen to the original record or see the movie, it sounds and feels very dated. But this production and this orchestration and these performances felt very fresh, I thought.
Yeah.
And Andrew Lloyd Webber was part of the whole process and, like, that modernizing. And I agree. I thought the sound was, the orchestration was particularly, the way that they modernized it was particularly great. And it felt fresh, which you rarely say that about Andrew Lloyd Webber material.
That's true. And can we just take a moment to go back and talk about Brandon Victor Dixon? He played Judas, and most of us know him from Hamilton. He took over the role of Aaron Burr after Leslie Odom Jr. left here on Broadway. And I remember you texted me, you're like, star in the making, if not made. Like, this was his moment. And I really felt it was. But both of you had pointed out a very funny tweet and meme that went around. So, he played both Aaron Burr and Judas, who basically kills the lead in both of those productions, and yet here he is, a star in the making. Yeah. So, you can kill Burr and Jesus and still come out ahead.
Still come out ahead, exactly.
So, I just thought it was extraordinary. He really, he held the show. I mean, as much as it was John Legend, I mean... Brandon was in the show more and really, really held it together. And kudos to him.
Yeah. I mean, there are moments, there's also large conversations around whether you're hiring Broadway veterans versus hiring pop musicians for this. And I think, you know, Brandon showed that range in his piece. Not to say, like, either John Legend did and Sarah, who has now been on Broadway twice for her role or her part in Waitress. But I think he was able to show that depth and bring that to Judas for sure. And it's, you could clearly see that. And obviously Norm and like Jin Ha and a couple of other actors who were Broadway veterans who also brought that to the role.
So did you, I assume you watched the broadcast.
I did watch the broadcast and live tweeted along with it. Because I didn't, I couldn't say stuff afterwards, so yeah.
So you're, having been in the room and having been out of the room, what were your sort of takeaway as an experience?
I'll put it this way, going into the dress rehearsal, I had no plans to watch the broadcast on Sunday because I was like, oh, gonna go see it in person. Why would I watch it again? And I was so taken with the show, seeing it in person, that I made sure to watch it live on Easter Sunday. So I think that's what's great. Obviously, too, I think there's a certain energy of having a live audience that you can't create necessarily in your living room or wherever you're watching something. Right. And I think that it was just so exciting to be around people and experience that in person. But this was the first NBC musical who had a live audience. And obviously, I think all of us, or at least Julie and I, have seen all of the live broadcast
yep.
musicals. And I am a huge fan just to, you know, that they are coming back and making a comeback. And I think that from now on, they will have live audiences while they tape. Mm-hmm. And I think that made a huge difference for NBC. And I also think, too, like, this wasn't, there was no, unlike Grease or A Christmas Story, there was no sets moving around. Mm-hmm. There was none of this, like, big choreography of the camera movements that, I mean, there was choreography and the Steadicam operators are amazing, but it wasn't like you had these, like, physical moving pieces outside of the actors. They let them act and sing and dance. And I think that actually made for a really compelling live thing to watch, just like I was going to see a show. But also, I think for television, I think it worked out in a way that was surprising in the sense that simplicity allowed the talent of all of the actors to shine. That was what I was curious to see. Because in person, I felt great, but I was so curious to know how that translated to TV, because as we all know, sometimes things translate better or worse on TV as it does to being in person.
Right.
Yeah, because you're right. There were no location changes, and yet it didn't feel like we were stuck in one place, which was part of my complaint, actually, in some of the scenes in The Greatest Showman, that I just felt like they were just shooting within this four-wall space, and I was like, you can do so much more. You're on film. Why does this feel so staticky? Why does it feel like a stage? And yet, here we are watching this Jesus Christ Superstar, and it's one place. But you have the scaffolding. You have, you know, all the rock over here. You have these tables that they shape like a cross. They were able to create such movement within the space that it didn't feel static, mm-hmm. which was quite impressive. That it didn't feel like just this theater. It felt like a living, moving thing, which was really cool.
Yeah, I think that they definitely, even with all the close-ups and quick cuts, which I agree with you was too much, you actually did kind of get a sense of there were different areas on the stage that were their own, like, discrete areas. I did not feel the confines of that venue at all.
Yeah. But you also, again, believe the actors, that they're in a new place or in a new location.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I think allowing that part to shine was critically important to the success of the show.
And so what's exciting for us is, having watched it on television and you got to see it live, we're going to actually go to Chicago, where they are putting on a production.
At Lyric Opera of Chicago, yes, in May. It's running from late April to late May, I believe. And it's being performed and a performer named Joe Lampert, who was in the Public Theater's Joan of Arc by David Byrne, is playing Mary Magdalene, and apparently she's doing fantastically in it. My inside sources tell me. Full disclosure, a friend of mine works at Lyric and said that she's great.
Great. So we're looking forward to that. And and Andrew Lloyd Webber has a little say in that production as well. It's interesting that these are his babies.
Yeah.
He's very much involved in the productions of his work still, which is...
I mean, they're his legacy, so there's definitely, you know, Edward Albee, the great American playwright, was the same way. Up until he passed away, he was very involved in all the revivals of his plays.
So, very cool. Looking forward to that. And if you're in the Chicago area, get tickets, because they're selling out, and it's very exciting.
Very much so.
Yeah, and rewatch the broadcast on Hulu and the NBC app in case you missed it.
And I think the soundtrack is out too. Because why not?
I've listened to that probably like 10 times.
Have you?
From
the show?
Yeah, from the live broadcast.
Awesome.
It's that the mixing's really great.
Much better on that one. Yeah, I figured they probably have time to sit with it.
Yeah.
So I think the next NBC production, they keep delaying it, but I know at some point we're going to see Bye Bye Birdie with Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah. She's only shooting 6 other shows right now.
Right.
I'm not kidding. Like, she's I'm very proud of her, but she's in Vegas. She's shooting Shades of Blue.
Yeah, we know. Because sometimes they take our block as a location, just an FYI to folks. Yeah. So,
but more often they take our block to park their trucks and generators. That's, right. That's really, it'd be at least if we could see our house on TV, that would be fun. But
right.
They just park the trucks.
But they're very nice. The catering guys are very nice as we walk by.
So, last question, uh-huh. And this can be ruminated over. Is there going to be a time when we actually start to run out of material? Because they're going fast and furious with the live broadcasts of musicals. Like, at a certain point, do we run out?
Not have enough musicals?
I think we have
enough. Not have enough musicals that are television worthy.
But I think the question is, what is television worthy is something that, like, we have clearly only been in a very revival-based, very classic... genre, I'm putting in air quotes, safe so far.
But now with like Mean Girls coming to this stage, with Jersey Boys, which I didn't particularly care for the movie adaptation. I mean, there are more commercial musicals that still haven't made their way yet to television.
Right.
So I don't think we're running out yet. I just think...
I mean, they did... Rocky Horror Picture Show, for goodness sake. So, I don't think so. I mean, we're going to keep going until Hamilton's allowed to be broadcast on television.
Right.
And then that will be
that'll be it.
We're done.
Let's shut it down. In fact, let's just shut down everything.
Television. Totally.
Hamilton's done it, and now we are gone.
No. There's so many more things to do.
Okay.
Well, so that brings us to what's on tap. And this is going to be a random question. You're probably going to hate me for it. But other than Hamilton, what other American historic figure, perhaps government related, should there be...
You took a turn with this.
A film. Do you have another question?
Well, I feel like we know exactly where we thought she was going to go with that question.
That there should be a film or musical about?
No. I thought you were going to ask, other than Hamilton, what other show should there be a live broadcast?
No, yeah, we've done that. This is a different question. So I can go first if you want.
Please do.
So since Joseph and I just visited North Bend, Ohio, outside of Cincinnati, William Henry Harrison, the president who stood outside without his overcoat and gave his inaugural speech and died a month later.
Because he got the flu.
Because he got the flu. It would be a short musical. But that's just because I wanted to say I went to North Bend, Ohio.
Well, to answer your question, I would say Robert Moses. Robert Moses was the New York City planner who controversially, essentially destroyed many things, many neighborhoods, so he could build, like, the Cross Bronx Expressway. He built Jones Beach. He built all sorts of things. And Robert Caro wrote an amazing Pulitzer Prize-winning book called The Power Broker, which is this huge epic tome. And I think that would be an interesting musical.
Huh. I am going to go with Hidden Figures, the musical, which also just got picked up for a series. Ooh. And so, having a group of female scientists, mm-hmm. there have never been a musical about them. I know it's not an American political figure, but, you know, connected
works
to NASA.
Works close enough. They work for NASA. They put a man on, you know, in space.
Yep,
we're totally good with that.
They work for the government, so that works.
Very good. Very good. And which musical other than Hamilton do you think should be given the live broadcast?
Well, I think years ago they did Annie. So that's my go-to because that was something that I loved as a child. But Les Mis.
Whew.
Why not?
You think Hugh Jackman's going to sign on for
no,
that?
No, thank you. I love you, Hugh. I respect you. You're a decent human being, but enough with the musicals.
Gretel?
I know they've been debating something like Rent, but obviously we've learned that Rock can, like, I know that's, for some, it's a difficult, not as safe of a show, for sure. But Jonathan Larson's shows are... would be amazing in something in terms of like the modern era musical.
I would pick Sweeney Todd.
Oh!
Speaking of which, there's a wonderful story that came out this week about the amazing character actor Bob Gunton.
Who played the warden in Shawshank Redemption, so he might be recognizable to folks from that.
He is a Vietnam vet who lost his dog tag in Vietnam and, like, last week was presented with the dog tag that had been found among with other dog tags.
It's part of this project that people are finding or collecting these old dog tags that have been found over in Vietnam. And... there's this nonprofit, basically a woman by herself who's single-handedly looking up the vets to see if she can return the dog tags to them. And she saw the name on this particular one. She went through several people. Turned out it wasn't them. One night, she was watching an episode of Monk, a rerun of Monk, the show with Tony Shalhoub. And Robert was a guest star. And she recognized the name and said... could it be? And it was.
And it was.
And he had been awarded several medals. He was in one of the biggest battles in Vietnam and rarely speaks about it. He just came back and built a career on Broadway.
He's been one of those, hey, it's that guy actors. My first encounter with him was in 1990, the first revival of Sweeney Todd on Broadway, and he played Sweeney Todd, and my mom got me tickets to see it for Christmas. And so ever since then, it was like, ooh, Bob Gunton. Hey, that's the warden. I remember him. I saw him in Sweeney Todd. So every time I've seen Bob Gunton through the years, which you just have to, like, turn your head and see Bob Gunton in something, I remember him in Sweeney Todd. And then to read this amazing story that I had no idea that he was a veteran, I had no idea that he had gone through this, was really amazing.
So it was a great story and a great place for us to leave off on this episode of Tapped.
Thank you for joining us.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Till next time. Bye.
Bye.